You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to the U Talk podcast. As usual, it's me, Grant Bagby.
And myself, Joseph Silverswag. And I have heard your critiques, U Talk podcast fans, and I am going to be close enough to the microphone today to make my wife jealous. That's my plan. Just be like, who is that woman?
It's disgusting to watch, guys, but he's doing it.
Yeah.
Well, it's back. You know, I took a week off for various reasons, and Joseph held down the fort, but now here we are. For all those who missed me,
I was one of them, Grant. I know you have a busy personal life and a lot of obligations, but this is more fun together than it is apart.
I agree. Well, let's get into it. You all know, if you don't know, actually, let's preface it as if we're getting new listeners. That's a good idea.
Yes, new listeners.
Assuming you're new to the show, we're going to do the quick hitters, which is just some quick little news bits that we feel affect our indirectly affect the Utes and the Utah sporting athletic program, and then we'll get into the meat of the show. And so, just so you know, we teased it on Twitter a little bit. We're going to get in some statistical analysis by our good buddy Joseph here and see what he has to say about the upcoming football season, and then we're going to get into the DBs,
We've done running backs and line. Then last week I talked about wide receivers, tight ends, and the quarterback. And we're going to do DBs this week and then finish it up as we roll into fall camp. Well, not quite fall camp, but it'll be time for the media days. And we'll finish it up as with the D-line and linebackers. And
yep.
Talk about putting guys' butts in the dirt, which is everybody's favorite part of Utah football.
Yeah, and then it's going to be due time to start doing some preseason previews.
Yeah, I mean, like,
so it's fun
about the opponents, and I mean, we're there.
We're getting close.
I'm excited, and because we are there, I did my preseason win predictions. Now,
well, slow down.
No, oh, right.
We'll get to that.
Dang it, the segue was so good. I had to jump on it, but it's quick hitters. I'm sorry.
We got one.
Ugh,
calm down.
So, all over.
Everyone knows it's the slowdown of summer, but the men's basketball announced another home and home with Minnesota this time. And as Joseph and I have been saying, Larry Krzyzkowiak,
he's thinking Final Four, man.
You know, based on the scheduling, and based on that scheduling, he's really going big. I mean, this is another Big Ten opponent.
Yeah.
So
he has his sights set on a resume that will make it impossible to keep them out of the tournament and give them a really good argument to get a high seed. He's playing for the tournament. He's playing for going deep. He's not messing around.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm intrigued. This is a young team. As much as there's some experience on it as well, but the guys that I think everyone's hoping will be contributing will be some of these new recruits, these really high-end recruits that were picked up this offseason. And how well do they mesh? Or everything, there's just a lot of variables, right? And so I hope we don't get our expectations too high based on this. But I do agree that he's setting himself up. He wants to make the tournament this year. I'm just not sure how it's going to fit in the grand scheme of things. I can't quite go high seed yet. I want to see some play time. But there's definitely reasons for hope based on the history of Larry Krzyzkowiak and scheduling.
Right, and I'm not so much predicting what they're going to do as I am saying this indicates this is what Larry thinks they're going to do, and
right,
what he's laying the groundwork and setting the stage for, which is a high seed deep tournament run.
Just
pretty cool. And I guess kind of corollary to that is I do think Larry Krzyzkowiak, head coach of the University of Utah running Utes, knows a little more than me about basketball. So just a bit.
Just a little.
So I trust his analysis more than everyone that is listening to this podcast right now. That's pretty safe.
No, I'm sure we have some awesome coaches listening to this podcast.
Yeah, right? Like Quinn Snyder. I love the U Talk podcast, man. That's the kind of competition.
All right.
All right.
So in case you didn't know, Joseph was plugging some numbers, you know, teasing some numbers and some analysis he did on Twitter.
I was being a real jerk. Well, and actually, I was going to be nice. I was going to tell people all the details. Yeah. And then Grant was like, no, be a jerk. And I was like, that's a good idea. Yeah. I will be a jerk.
It was totally me. Yeah. Totally me. I made everyone wait. But here it is. So, Joseph, Mr. National Title Joseph is in the studio.
I am. I am BYU 1280 host mode. The first thing I want to talk about, though, is me a little bit because,
okay.
Well, you ask the question, like, well, what are these numbers? Where do these come from? And most people who are listening to this have been following me a while, know that I do this stuff, but maybe don't know all the details here. So what this is what I call GAWP, or Global Adjusted Win Percentage. It is based on a five-year running analysis of win percentage for each game projected from FPI, S&P Plus, and FEI, which are three different but related advanced metrics that I use. And then I analyzed those. I found some weaknesses in them in terms of things that they missed on a consistent basis. I added adjustments for those weaknesses. I average out in a weighted average formula those three win percentages, and I come up with win percentages for every team in the Pac-12. It's when I say 5 years, it's been a long 5 years, hundreds of hours of work and analysis, and it's good. It works. Last year was my debut in terms of publicizing this, and my most probable win totals for the Pac-12 were really, really close. Like, really close. No, I missed.
I remember you talking about it last season. You were very, very high on
it. I was pleased, and it worked. I mean, look at this. So these are my predictions. I missed Arizona, ASU, Colorado, Oregon, UCLA by one game, either up or down. I missed Cal by two games. I missed Oregon State by three games. And every other team I got exactly right.
That's a regular total season win loss record.
Yeah, regular season win prediction. I guess 9 for Washington State, 10 for Washington, 6 for Utah, 9 for USC, and they're all right. I mean, this thing works really well, and I'm really proud of it. And this year, unlike every other year in the past, the best team in the North is the Utes. By not a huge margin, but
the South?
Yes, the South. The best team in the South is the Utes. Not quite the North. That's Washington. They definitely have the edge. But Utah is projected as the second best team in the Pac-12. They're projected to be better than USC. I've got them at a 99% chance to be bowl eligible. This is before the season even starts, based on discrete win percentages for each game.
So does this is only a Pac-12 conference, though? Not.
I don't make the team adjustments for out-of-conference games. Those are neutral, but they're based on the same basic analysis in terms of averaging the win probabilities extrapolated from the advanced metrics. So okay. not to word salad you guys too much, but I use the same ideas to project the win probabilities for other schools, including BYU. And one of my favorite little tidbits is that my formula system here projects a 98% chance for Utah to defeat the Cougars, which is it made a few people really mad on Twitter.
Of course it did.
Which I love. That's how you know you've done good analysis.
Well, look, you talked rivalry on Twitter, and people were upset about it. So
yeah, it's exciting.
It's kind of guaranteed. All right, so how do you want to do this? Do you want to talk general things, or do you want to go through the season, or what do you
want
to
do? Well, so I guess
I don't really go through the season, right? I mean, a lot of people are doing this analysis. Well, Utah's going to win this one, lose that one, then win those two. And I don't do that. I have Utah has a 99.9% chance to win their first game, a 50.7% chance to win their seventh game, a 97.9% chance to win their 12th game. And then I do literally every single possible combination of wins and losses all the way from 12-0 to 0-12 for every single team, and I calculate the independent probability of each of those seasons, and then I add them all together. And I can go through the Utes. Let me pick out a couple of interesting tidbits from the whole Pac-12 real quick. You've got two real front runners in the South, USC and Utah, very close, both with a 1% chance to finish undefeated, less than 10% chance for 11 wins, 15 for USC, 20 for Utah, 10-2. So both with kind of an outside shot at a playoff-worthy resume, and both with a really good shot at a Rose Bowl berth. Then the only other team worth writing home about in the South is Arizona. They've got a median projected win of 8. And they're the only team with a median projected win that includes bowl eligibility. ASU, UCLA are 5. Colorado is 3. So it's going to be 3 versus each other with 3 kind of also-rans is what this predicts. The North is more interesting in some ways and less interesting in others in that Washington is just far and away, head and shoulders better than everybody else. There's no reason to think that anybody is really going to compete with them, but Cal, Oregon, and Stanford are razor-thin margin between those three teams. Cal's surprising. Cal really popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm surprised that it's Cal and not Washington State.
Washington State doesn't look good in this analysis. They've got a median win probability that's 6-6. They lost a lot last year. Hercules Mataafa and other major early departures. A big thing is Tyler Helsinki. As you may remember, he was a victim of suicide over the summer, which means one the tragedy obviously takes precedent over any analysis that you might do. But it's a lot of passing yards as well and a lot of a game experience that Washington State just doesn't have, although their big losses are really on the defensive end. Let me scroll down here. No, I don't have it there. But to go into the Utes a little bit more, if you want, to do that, we've got, if I do it kind of my way here, we've got high probability wins where they're very likely to win. All of their out-of-conference games are at least over 80%. They have coin flip games against USC and UCLA. They have better than coin flips against ASU, Oregon, Washington State, and Arizona. And the only team that I have them not at least a slight favorite is Washington. I have them favored in every other game, including by 0.7% against USC. I've got USC as a 50.7 for the Utes. So really, really close, but they're favored in 11 of 12 games in my analysis. And again, I want to emphasize, this isn't like a homer analysis that I tweak until the Utes get 10 wins. Last year, they were projected at 6. The year before that, I want to say 7, although I have to check. The year before that, I think, was 8. They've been within half a game every time so far. So pretty accurate, and this is the first time the model has spit out a Utes team that it thought was going to be any good at all or notable nationally.
I mean,
so I'm pumped is the point.
Yeah, I mean, you've been tooting that horn for a good solid 8 months about how good this Utah team is going to be. And then there's not a ton to argue against it, right? You got a returning starting quarterback. You've got a ton of depth at running back. We've got A great defense is always to be assumed with the Utes, along with great special teams. So, you know, when you're getting every side of the game, you know, every side of the field covered to some extent, you're going to have a good team. A 10-win team, maybe higher. Like, that's saying something.
Especially with the out-of-conference, but the out-of-division schedule of the Utes. I think if you're picking a fight with the Utes, it's the out-of-division schedule and the slate that they have to go through, which is Washington, Oregon, and... who's the other one? Washington State? Yeah. So that, and Stanford. So yeah, Washington, Stanford, Washington State, Stanford, and Oregon. Those are the best teams in the Pac-12 North. They don't get the dodges that the other schools get. What I think gives them a big advantage in this analysis is those out-of-conference games. I think a lot of people look at those as sort of lay observers who aren't thinking about it, and they think of them as much closer to coin flips than they actually are. When the reality is that numerically, from an advanced statistical perspective, they're not close. The BYU game in particular, I was surprised. Usually that one comes out in the 40-60 range, but it's important for people to remember just how legitimately terrible BYU was. I think there's kind of a movement to sort of forget that season for BYU and move on and call it a fluke, which is fair, I think, to a certain extent. But guess what? That was their performance, and that's what we have to go off in terms of predicting their performance this year. And that is... that is not good. I mean, there's not talent on that team. And if there was talent on that team, they would have beaten UMass, you know? I mean, you can roll out any Power 5 talent-level team and not coach them and not do much, just say, go beat your guy. And, I mean, 9 times out of 10, you're going to beat UMass or another team like that. And BYU didn't, and they didn't on more than one occasion. And then they didn't recruit anybody who's great. And, I mean, you hear them talking about their quarterback. I can't even remember his name. But, you know, he's some kind of average recruit. He's not a particularly stunning, well-developed, ready-to-play-now player. And if a change in offensive system has been a problem for the Utes in the past, it's going to be a problem for the Cougars this year, too. Although my analysis doesn't take that in. But yeah, I think people think of Northern Illinois as a better team than they are because they had a recent really, really good season. Yeah, so when people are, oh, they're pretty good, right? Well, they were really good that year, but this year they're not. They are projected to be very bad. And BYU, you kind of think the same. Well, those games are always close, and BYU is usually a pretty good team. There's no reason to expect them to be a good team this year. And Weber State's Weber State. It's an FCS game, and so Utah should easily go 3-0, and that offsets some of the challenges with the other games. Although, like I said, I've got Utah favored in 4 out of 5 of those, you know, really tough gauntlet games, and 3 out of 4 of the North. So maybe they aren't as challenging as people expect.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I'm trying to control my expectations because someone's got to put a damper on things.
Nope. And we've got about a 1/3 chance of finishing with better than 10 wins. I mean, that's Rose Bowl or other New Year's Six Bowl level. Top 10. Utah's a top 10 team this year.
I can't get on that bandwagon, but... They,
I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, until I see the flare, right? Because ultimately, the playoffs, the New Year's Six, like, there's got to be some flare to this team that's going to catch eyeballs, because we both know
that's
that the
true.
Media
that's a good point.
And the committee are not watching the West Coast as much, and the Pac-12 gets discounted. So unless the Utes are going to do some fabulous butt kickings, like literally crushing people and scoring points, like, unfortunately, they're not going to be clamorous enough for people to say, oh yeah, that's a dominant team, you know, they win every game by maybe a touchdown, but it's a defensive battle, blah blah blah. Like, I can see the arguments.
Right, it's a pitch that works in the SEC. You know, LSU plays that schedule or similar and comes away with 10 wins. They're going to go to the, you know, maybe not the playoff, but do really well. Utah plays a very similar style, does the same thing, and you may be right about that. But from my perspective of where they're going to rank and how you should think of the season, top 10. So maybe not AP top 10, but I'll peg them as a top 10 season from an advanced metrics perspective. That's my prediction based on my analysis over the last few weeks.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens.
I'm so excited. I'm just so pumped because I really think they're that good. And I don't do this. I'm not this guy all the time, but I am this year. I think they're that good.
Well, Troy Taylor and the rest of the offense, it's time to carry your weight. And the defense and special teams keeps doing the same. And then I'll get on that boat with you. Okay. But I don't know.
But if you get on the boat after you see the team, it's not nearly as much fun. The hype train runs fastest without any actual games to talk about.
Joseph, I was going to be sober on the boat anyway, so it's okay if I get on the boat.
No, we're serving peach bellinis on the boat. Those will go straight to your head, Grant.
All right. Well, let's talk some defensive backs, and maybe are we including safeties in this?
We may talk about safeties a little bit in the context of how they may roll up to linebacker next week, but I think we should talk about sort of pass defense and the players who we expect.
I expect no completed passes. How about that?
Zero. Opponent completion percentage is 0%. That's the goal. It is a very reasonable goal. No, it's not at all. But very, very good is a very reasonable goal. And you'll see this all over. You can look at Phil Steele or other kind of national guys, and they'll put Utah's secondary in the top 10 over and over and over again. And that's because they're great. Utah has three definite all Pac-12 first team candidates. Arguably, they have three All-American candidate cornerbacks in Julian Blackman and Jaylon Johnson.
Yep.
And the one who we're not talking about quite as much is Javelin Guidry, because he's technically a nickelback. When national people look at the roster, they say, oh, well, you know, he's going to get a few snaps here and there. And sure, he had a 4 pass breakups and interception last year, but, you know, he's not getting a lot of playing time. But if you watch these, you know, nickel packages is 60 to 70 or even more in the kind of modern Utes defense, and 60 to 70%. So he's seeing a lot of snaps. He's got a lot of opportunities. And against the offenses that Utah faces, he gets thrown to a lot. And when you've got guys like Blackman and Johnson on the perimeter, you can't compete with those guys most of the time. I mean, both of them are physically totally dominant over 90% of the wide receivers they're going to face. And most of the time, the guys they're covering are not going to be open. So where do you go? Well, you go to the next guy, the slot wide receiver, and that's where you're going to find Guidry.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. I'm hoping with Gary Anderson now coaching and focusing on defensive line more, that the line is going to get the pressure. Because like you said, with this level of talent at cornerback and nickel, like, there's not going to be a lot of open wide receivers. So the defensive line is going to have time to get to the quarterback. The question is, will they? Because that's been a problem the last year.
It hasn't been as successful in the past, and particularly Pease was kind of a genius at figuring out what they were going to do next and getting to the quarterback. And
but I was wearing my Sac Lake City shirt with pride.
Yeah, and we couldn't really do that last year.
No, definitely couldn't.
And some of that was talent. We'll get into that next week. Right. But, I think obviously there's an interplay there, and the better the coverage is, the better the pressure is. But if the pressure can even shave off a tenth of a second off the average time the quarterback has, because wide receivers will always get open eventually because right. the rules don't let you cover in a way that you can't touch the guy. So he's right. always going to run in a direction that you're not running and get a little separation eventually. But if you can shave off that time, the quarterback's going to have the choice of either getting sacked or throwing to a guy in coverage. And all three of these guys can pick off passes a lot. I mean, very successfully. Yeah. They're very good at it. So there's a ton of upside. I mean, it's just an embarrassment of riches at DB. And we haven't even gotten to the second string.
The riches in the... Yeah. Well,
yeah, we also have safety to talk about, which is equally exciting. But maybe not equally. We're talking three All-American candidates at quarterback. Safety's not quite there. But the second string, Trey Strong is great. Tyrone Smith is really good. Josh Nurse probably going to be playing safety, could play a little corner. He's supposed to be very, very good. I'm looking through the roster here to see. I've heard a lot of good stuff about Quinn Fabrizio. So he's a freshman. He's not somebody whose name you're going to hear a lot. May not be somebody whose name you hear called a lot. But you got to like his numbers. He's 6'3". He's 212. I think he's back from a mission, so he may be a little slow to kind of pick up. But he's got that enormous long frame that Coach Shaw and Coach Witt have been able to do so much with guys like Jalen Johnson and Julian Blackman, although he's actually bigger than they are. He's really more of a safety-sized guy, but we'll see what he plays.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I remember, what was it? I'm trying to remember what the goal was. It was it four turnovers and a touchdown?
Yeah, four picks and a score was kind of what his thing was.
Yeah, it was like four turnovers and a score, right? I feel like because of this secondary, like this year we're going to see that happen and more. Like, honestly, like this secondary, I think between the safeties and the cornerbacks, like quarterbacks are going to be dying.
It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. Every single one of these guys is excellent. Every single one of them, with maybe the exception of Guidry just because he's 5'9", is an NFL player.
Well, and then you have, man, I'm totally blinking on it. I feel like in the bowl game, the Utes like absolutely lit up a quarterback. I'm blinking out here.
Is this Washington?
No.
Because they basically killed the poor kid.
Okay, maybe Washington.
That was on that final drive where he went to the outside and got helicoptered, and it was brutal, and then they won anyway somehow because that was last year.
No, it was maybe I can't remember which game it is. I'm no historian myself, but there was a game where the defensive line, it took them forever to get to the quarterback, but there was no open wide receivers, and then they finally got to him, and they just leveled the dude, and he stayed down, and that is the amazingness of the secondary.
Yeah.
And you got the second string to fill them in.
So you get those coverage sacks, and I think you will see
those. We're going to get a lot of those.
But for safeties, we've still got Karyan Ballard on the roster, and he was excellent last year. And I think we'll be better. There was a noticeable, to my eye, drop-off in terms of knowledge of the defense between Ballard and oh, gosh, now I can't remember his name. The Saints. He's now playing for the Saints, but I can't remember his name.
Oh, Marcus Williams.
Marcus Williams, not Wilson. That was my problem. Marcus Wilson, Williams. But I think that will be less this year. Marquise Blair is always a player to watch. He's number 13, if you don't know. Yep. But he's always a number to watch in the backfield because he hits like an...
lighten people up.
Like a son of a gun. It's amazing. So the rules when you're in the press box are you're not allowed to be a fan, you're not allowed to cheer, you have to be very professional. And Liz will kick you out if you kind of go too far. There was a hit that Blair laid on, it was actually the right tackle for North Dakota in the first game. And he was just trying to get to the quarterback and kind of nailed this tackle on his way to the quarterback on a blitz and leveled him. And keep in mind, this is the right tackle for a team that loves to run the ball. I looked him up. It's like 290-pound guy, literally twice Blair's size. And he just blew him up. It was beautiful. And I have not ever seen a press box react more like fans than in that moment where every single guy, their hands went up like, oh! And then they all strained to pull it back in, but it was too good. And he is so fun to watch. We hope he stays healthy. The way he hits and the way he plays, 100%, every ounce of energy he's got. And I think sometimes that results in injuries if you don't know when to pull
back.
That's
why there's good. There's some depth there because he doesn't have to play every snap. And as much as I know we're planning on sliding some safeties up and et cetera, at least that sounds like that's going to happen. Hopefully there's enough of a rotation there that he's not taking as many hits. Because like you said, he's just laying people out. Yeah. Am I remembering
right? You want to use him as kind of like a sniper. Like he's not doing that on every play. He doesn't need to do that on every play. Yeah. But when you've got a guy who you just need to kind of punish, he's the one that you send out there. I remember this was years ago now, but the game against Michigan with Devin Funchess, who was their wide receiver, 6'5", 240 pounds. Just unstoppable kind of force of nature sort of player. He's playing tight end in the NFL now. And about 2-3 drives into the game, he catches a pass over the middle, and Brian Blecken just drills him. Hit him absolutely as hard as he can, and it really changed the character of the offense when the Utes made clear, we can't stop your guy from catching this ball, but we can hit him every single time he does to where he doesn't want to catch it anymore. And Blair has that same ability of convincing a wide receiver that it is not worth it to go up in the middle to get a contested ball, that it's just going to hurt too much. And that's a really, really useful tool to have. In terms of depth, excited about Josh Nurse. He came in at a wide receiver, flipped over to safety in fall camp last year. A lot of really good buzz around him, although with so much depth in the secondary, didn't see much time or maybe any. And then who's the other guy from Blinn? Vontae Davis. I've heard good things about him as well. There's actually three Blinn College junior college graduates in Utah's secondary. That's a well that they've gone to a lot for recruiting, and Blinn is a very well-regarded JUCO institution for training future P5 players.
Future Utes.
There's a lot of them here.
Yeah, of all the position groups that I just don't have questions about, it's the secondary.
You can't at this point. There's so many of them in the league.
Even historically, though.
Yeah, it's just everyone's just always been so good every time.
Yeah, I just don't doubt the secondary. I used to not doubt the defensive line until last season, and so now, we'll see what happens. But there's no reason to believe we're not going to be a top pass defensive team, because ultimately we've just got so much talent back there. If the wide receivers are afraid to go over the middle – good grief, I can't speak all of a sudden. If they're afraid to go over the middle because of our safeties, and our CBs are keeping them locked down on the edges, and we've got Guidry covering the slot, what about that does not make you happy? Good luck. Pass on that, guys.
There's nowhere to go to. There's no weakness. There's no exploitable thing. The only thing that would work is sort of a structural approach like you see from Leach, where you just run plays that you try and make impossible to cover. In practice, that's not a great strategy either, although it doesn't feel that way when you're watching it be played, because they do so many passes that it feels like they're succeeding even when they're not. The one caution I would do is, you were talking about 4 and a score, and my feeling on interceptions is that they're not really reliable, that we can rely on these guys to break up passes and to get their hands in between and to keep completion percentages down, but we can't be sure that they're going to be able to turn those tip balls into picks at a particularly high rate. So I'm always cautious about relying on turnovers as sort of a way of winning, but I don't think this team needs them to be a successful defense. Sometimes a team does. They're giving up too many big plays and their run defense isn't good enough. So teams either march down the field or turn the ball over, and that's just not going to happen. I think this team is gonna stymie first down runs and third down passes, and teams are going to punt a lot, whether they're turning the ball over in the game or not.
No, and I agree that I don't. Well, based on your projections alone, like, this team's not going to need the turnovers.
Yeah.
The thing about the secondary is they're talented enough and experienced enough that those tip balls, there's going to be a safety there ready to catch that tip ball, or there's going to be someone else. Like, I think it's realistic. They're definitely probably going to get one a game, is what I'd be willing to predict.
I would say on average, yeah.
You can
at least
almost expect
probably two or three
more. Mm-hmm. So I think the 4 score is going to be a pretty easy goal for this defense this year.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that it's not something that a coach should recommend or that players shouldn't strive for, because in the moment of getting that interception or making that play, it is all about the player and their skill and their ability. But from my perspective, as sort of aggregating plays, as long as they're getting the pass breakups, I figure, well, the interceptions are going to come at about the same rate they do for everybody, which is about 15-20% of pass breakups and interceptions. So if they're getting a ton of pass breakups, the picks will come. But man, it is just good news. You dig into this roster and it's just, well, that's good and that's good and that's good. And this particularly true with this secondary, which is returning almost every starter, has fantastic depth, is loaded with NFL talent, and has, if not the one of the best coaching staffs in the country working on it. It's just wonderful, wonderful time to be a fan of the U-Pass defense, and it's a big part of why I've got them projected to 10-plus wins.
All right. Well, we'll see it. On that note, I was about to say go Utes, but hey, go give us a review first.
Yes.
Go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play.
Talk Podcast.
Yes. Help us out with some reviews, or, I mean, if you can't give us a good review, email us, utalk@gmail.com, or reach out to either of us on Twitter or at utalkpodcast on Twitter, and we'd love to apply your feedback. We've been getting the feedback on the sound quality, and we're hoping we're getting better and better each week, so please let us know. Until next week, go Utes.
Go Utes.
To UTalk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UTalkPodcast or email @UTalk@gmail.com.